Exodus chapter 33 is where we are today, and a couple weeks back, 2 weeks ago, we talked about the formative experience that has just happened that's shaping these chapters we're in. And chapter 32 was the big sin of Israel when they made a golden calf and decided to worship this golden calf instead of God. And it has all kinds of ramifications that are going on, and we're going to look at some of those today. But it was a mistake of monumental proportions. Last week, we kind of summarized it as an epic fail. That's the term that's going around these days when you make a big mistake or commit a big sin. It's an epic fail. And so we've got to have a few more of these pictures up here. We had some last week, but here's some epic fails. Who takes an escalator to get into the gym? That's an epic fail, whoever put that there. Next one. We have some good sign people in our church. They don't ever put things on there like this, but that would be an epic fail right there. Don't let the worries kill you. Let the church help. All right. And then this one, this is in a foreign country, in an airport. For restrooms, go back toward your behind. Might want to word that a little differently. Have someone proofread what you put on the screen. All right. Well, the Israelites had sinned big time, and God had been upset, and there were ways he dealt with them. Moses was angry with them. In fact, you know who was the first person to break all 10 commandments?
Moses.
He had the two tablets. So he broke the tablet. That one, if it's a groaner, I'll give the credit. If you laugh, I would take the credit. Since you groaned, it was Barry Walters' joke. And can take your beef with him later. But on top of all that, God said he was not going with them to the promised land. So if you've got your Bibles open here to Exodus chapter 33, we're going to read where God tells them that bad news. The first six verses of chapter 33. And this is what he says. The Lord said to Moses, "Leave this place, you and the people you brought up out of Egypt, and go up to the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." That would be promised land. He said, I would give to your descendants. "I will send an angel before you to drive out the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and Jebusites. Go up to the land flowing with milk and honey. But I will not go with you, because you are a stiff-necked people, and I might destroy you on the way." When the people heard these distressing words, they began to mourn, and no one put on any ornaments. Ornaments are their jewelry that they had been given from the Egyptians. For the Lord had said to Moses, "Tell the Israelites that you are a stiff-necked people. If I were to go with you even for a moment, I might destroy you. Now take off your ornaments, and I will decide what to do with you." So the Israelites stripped off their ornaments at Mount Horeb. God says, you guys have been here long enough at Mount Sinai. You've gotten all the laws, everything that you need, and it's time to get moving and go up to the promised land. Now, previously, God had said, you need to go up there, and I'm going to go with you. I will open the way myself. He had said also that he would send an angel, but now he's saying something very different. Now he says, I'm only going to send an angel to go up ahead of you. I am not going with you. This was a huge change of course for God. It was a very different plan that was now being given through Moses. These were not comforting words. These were devastating words. This was like the end of the program for the Israelites. They knew God was pulling away from them. He was distancing himself from them. It would not be the same anymore. This meant they were not going to be the people of God in the same way as God had already promised in his covenant with them. They had broken their side of the covenant. This means there was going to be no tabernacle with God dwelling in his presence in the middle of the camp, in this amazing tent, in the Ark of the Covenant, and all these things. It would not be that way anymore. It meant that the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire and all the ways God was demonstrating his presence would no longer have it as they went up to the promised land. So things were pretty bleak. They stripped off their ornaments, their jewelry, which, as I said, the Egyptians gave this to them. They were the richest desert people ever in history because of what they had been given by the Egyptians. They were blinging in the desert. You know what bling is, right? They took all that off. It was time for mourning. The world was bleak. You know, as the people of God, the one thing we have going for us is his presence. We don't really have a whole lot else going for us than him. So here they are, hanging in the balance, their future in God's hands, wondering what in the world they're going to do as they head up to the promised land. Life was different. They don't know how they're going to go. It's a desperate situation. They're going to have to somehow survive the desert, survive getting food and water, survive the enemies that want to attack them, and somehow get into the land, which was full of well-armed, strong, fighting people. How in the world are they ever going to do all that? You ever felt like that before? There's so much going on, so much pressure, that you have no idea how you're going to go forward. It feels hopeless. You feel helpless. You're looking ahead, and maybe you've caused the problem like the Israelites did. Maybe you have been the one who made all this mess in your life, and your bad decisions have gotten you there, and you're going, what in the world? How am I ever going to get out of this? Maybe sometimes you haven't created the problem. Maybe it's just stuff that's happening. There's a family crisis, or there's a health crisis, or there's financial crisis, or just so much pressure, so much to do, so much stress that you don't know how you're going to handle it. And you go, I don't think I can go forward from here. I'm desperate. I hope as the people of God, we never think so highly of ourselves that we think we've got it all together, that we can handle life, that we can get it done, we can do it in our own strength. Anybody been there that you felt, I need God or else I don't know what I'm going to do? Anybody been there this past week? I have been there this past week. Every day. You know, Jesus railed against the Pharisees because they thought they had it all together and they didn't really need God. They had it under control. May we never be those people that think we have it all together. Well, the Israelites now knew how much they needed God. Not a golden calf. They needed God. They needed his presence. And so they were mourning. They were praying. And Moses gets to praying. And this is where we get into the meat of our passage here. We're going to actually skip over verses 7 through 11. We covered those last week. And we're going to get to verse 12. And what you're going to see in this remaining half of the chapter is two bold and desperate and amazing prayers by Moses that are the kind of prayers that people who know how desperate they are from God can pray. You can pray these. I trust you'll make these your prayer. We will make these our prayer today as we realize how much we need the Lord. Picking up in verse 12, this is what Moses says. He goes right to the Lord and says, God, you've been telling me, lead these people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. You've said, I know you by name, and you found favor with me. If you're pleased with me, teach me your ways so that I may know you and continue to find favor with you. Remember that this nation is your people. And God replies, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. And Moses said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? Let's pause there. Moses was feeling the pressure of leading this nation. It was all on his shoulders, and so he knew he couldn't do it alone. So that's part of what Moses is asking for. God had been giving him the ability all the way up to this point. And so he's saying, Lord, you've been telling me to lead these people, but you sent me mixed messages. First you said you were going and you're sending an angel. Now you're saying you're only going to send an angel. This is not going to work, God. This plan that you're telling me now isn't going to work. God, he's arguing, Lord, you said you've known me by name. You said I found favor with you. So why are you pulling away? In other words, I don't want to do this alone. I don't want to do this with just an angel. I don't want anything less than you. And so he keeps bringing things up to the Lord, and he says, you know, you've found favor with me, you've told me your name, and remember, this nation is your people, they're not my people, this problem is yours, God, and You started this. You need to finish it. And so God gives his first response to Moses in verse 14. My presence will go with you, singular. You can read it in the Hebrew language. With you, singular. And I will give you, singular, rest. What God's saying in regards to this initial conversation with Moses is, okay, Moses, I see your point here, and I will grant you the fact that you do need me, and so I will be with you, and I will give you rest. Giving you rest is equivalent to, yes, you'll go to the promised land. You'll make it there to this place of rest. And that's wonderful for Moses. But Moses sees right through it, and he's like, wait a second, okay, that's great, you're going with me, but now he reaches deep and he pulls out this bold prayer. It's the big kahuna. He just has to lay before the Lord and say, God, this isn't going to work that you're just with me. He says, if your presence does not go with us, plural, then do not send us up from this place. If you're not going to come with all of us, don't send any of us to go. That's a big prayer he's asking God. He's saying, if this visible, accessible presence of God doesn't go with our nation, all of our people, then don't send us up from here. Not just your omnipresence, right? We talked last week, the omnipresence of God, he's everywhere. If your manifest, visible presence, powerful presence, your accessible presence, the one that we can see and interact with and worship, if you're not going with us, don't send us up. It's not worth it. We can't face it. We're going to fail. This was a plea to have God back in the tabernacle, that they could build the tabernacle and he would dwell there. This was a plea to have him back as the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire. This was a plea to have him be the real leader of the people, not just Moses. And besides, as it says in verse 16, what would ever distinguish us from the rest of the world? We'll just be another average people. If you send us up there, and you're not dwelling there with us, how will we be different from any other nation on earth? God, this plan is not going to work. If we don't have you, we're just going to blend in. We're going to look powerless. We're going to have nothing that sets us apart. I was thinking about this prayer this week as we were doing the sound system installation on Tuesday. If your presence doesn't go with us, don't send us. I think that's how Matt Stein was feeling when he went up on that lift. That was, you know, right here, this hydraulic lift up to the ceiling, and he's the one that you can barely see, like the bottom of his red shirt right there. And he's hoisted up with all this weight in this precarious position, hanging these speakers. And Matt, did you pray, if God doesn't go with me up here, don't send me up here? Thankfully, you were safe and God got you through. But I do appreciate all of you guys who were helping on this week to get this work done. It was great. Had a good time. This prayer is a prayer that the people of God pray when they know they need God's power and they need God's presence. You become rightfully aware of your inadequacy, and your desperate plea is, don't even send me forward, God, unless you're coming. Unless I know you're going to be with me. Don't send me forward into this problem. Don't send me forward into this call, into this mission, into going forward with my life, unless you're coming with me. I'm in a study right now with some guys here at a church, looking through John 15, the first part of that chapter, and the analogy that Jesus makes of the vine and the branches. And he says the Father is the gardener, Jesus is the vine coming out of the ground with the nourishment, with its roots in the ground, and we're the branches coming off of the vine. And nowhere in this study does the command ever come for these branches. We're the branches. It doesn't tell us, work real hard and squeeze out some grapes. Make the fruit come out of you as a branch. Work real hard to produce fruit. It's not in the passage. What the branch is told to do is this. Stay connected to the vine. Stay connected to the presence of God, his power in your life. His presence in your life. And if you have that, then you will have fruit. Don't worry about the fruit. Stay connected to me. And somehow we get tricked in this life into thinking that we have to work real hard for God. We have to go, we have to serve Him, we have to fix the problems in our life and get this all together and, as if it's all up to us. And Jesus says there in that passage, no, no, your job is to stay with me and I will produce the fruit in your life. Don't get it the other way around. God doesn't tell us to go and serve Him and He'll stand back as the cheerleader and clap for us and say, yeah, you did it, great. He doesn't tell us to go and serve for Him. He says, serve with me. Let me go with you. Let me be the one in your life. Because as Jesus says very poignantly in that passage, without me, you can do nothing. Nothing. That is the life that God wants for us to have. Stay connected to His presence. Stay aware of Him. Don't strive in your own strength. Talk to Him. Depend on Him. Cultivate God's presence in your life. That's what Moses understood here when he's asking this prayer. If you does not go with us, if you do not go with us, do not send us up from here. You guys saw it, didn't you? Yeah. Today marks 1 year ago that I was officially announced here at Emmanuel and also at my other church, previous church in Ohio, that we had accepted the call to come here and be pastor. It's been an interesting time here this past fall, just marking in our minds the dates that, thank you. Marking the dates along the way of a year ago we were having our first interview, or this is a year ago we put in our resume here, and a year ago is when we told our kids that it was a possibility. A year ago is when we came and candidated here. That was last weekend. It was a year ago, and then we made the decision this week. The church here extended a call to us, and we accepted, and the news was broke to everybody. And it's been an amazing year. God has done some great stuff in our lives. We've seen Him work. We've seen us as a church come together. You guys have supported us and loved us and really thankful for this past year. But when we were in this process trying to decide what we're supposed to do, trying to discern the will of the Lord, does He want us to go? Does He want us to consider moving? It was a hard decision. We had been there for 12 years. Our family was established. Our kids, that's all they knew. I was not interested in just moving for moving's sake. It's an uncomfortable thing to move up 5 hours away, start a new life. You don't know people. It's a new job. It's a new level of responsibility for me. And I had some Moses type of prayers going on during that time. At the end of August was when we were having to decide whether to put, for me to put my resume in here at the church. Terry Smith had contacted us and asked us for it. We were praying, talking, wrestling through that for a month. And this is from August 26th. At the end of August, right before we did sense the Lord's confirmation on this. And this is what I wrote. I said, I know what is biggest on my heart this morning is the looming question of what you're leading us to. It seems like the accelerator is down and it's going fast. In just a month's time, we've gone from theoretically being open to this to having now shared it with a number of people in our life. I was thinking about this would probably come in timing, and just so you know, the church there is building a building. It had already started. We've broken ground, and I did not think that's a good time to leave a church staff. And it's like, God, this must not be your timing. So I wrote, I thought it would happen maybe after building sometime, not before, not during. Jesus, what are you doing? I don't want any of it without you. Said none of it. I don't want to lose my close walk with you. I don't want to lose my ability to relate to my family. I don't want the pressure of this job unless, Lord, it is with you. He said, like Moses, I won't go without you. Your power, your leading, your presence, I want you, Lord, nothing less. I surrender our future. I surrender the boys. My fears of inadequacy. My fears of success or failure. If you want me, you call me. But I have to say in my flesh, I'm still surprised at how you're leading. We prayed, I was open, and now we have seeming confirmation that this is what you want us to do. I praise you, and my hope is in you. Folks, when we're in a spot where we don't know what to do, we feel like the Lord's pushing us forward in some way, we have the pressure of the world on our shoulders, this is what you pray. I don't want to go forward unless you're going with me. Unless I know, unless I have your promise, your assurance that you're not going to leave me. You're going to work out the details. You're going to open all the doors. I'm not going to push my way forward through this without you. You know, I'm still desperately aware, a year later, of my need for his presence. This church, folks, God has done amazing work building this church, blessing this church, many years, decades. And then 9 years ago, those of you who are here know that this church was in a very difficult spot, but the Lord graciously has turned around this church. And you've seen him do some amazing things, but folks, we're not out of the woods. We're never going to be in a place where we graduate from desperately needing his presence and his power in our church and in our lives. You don't graduate from that. Folks, there are still people, there are people here in this church, and there always will be, who need to get free from bondage of things in their life, people who need healing, people who are spiritually in a rut and need God to wake them up. We have a community that needs Jesus that's lost without him. We have ministries that need to be strengthened. We have ministries that need to be started. We need God to bring us an associate pastor. Folks, the list goes on and on and on. If God's not with us, let's not go forward. What will make us different from any other place, any other church where people come and they play church and they go through the motions? What makes the church different? God's presence makes us different. Do we have that here at Emmanuel? If we're not desperate for the presence he promised us, then nothing is worth going forward for. Nothing less than God's presence in our church will do. And that's true for our church, and it's true in your life. Without the Lord's presence, how are you different from anybody else? You don't want to face the future alone. You don't want to face the challenges and hardships. You can't answer his call in your life unless you know he's with you. Verse 17. The Lord said to Moses, I will do the very thing you have asked because I am pleased with you and I know you by name. What a gracious response of the Lord to Moses' prayer. What a gracious response he gives to us when we ask, Lord, go with me. I need you. I'm not going forward without you. The Lord promises he will never leave us or forsake us. He's promised us the deposit of his Holy Spirit living in us. We can have access to the full presence of God. He's with us. He's promised us that. For Moses, though, he doesn't stop there. There's two big prayers, and the next one comes right after it, verse 18. Then Moses said, now show me your glory. Show me your glory, Lord. I love this because Moses takes his first prayer, and then the second one, he goes even deeper. He goes even further with it. It's a bold thing to ask. Charles Spurgeon, the great 19th century preacher, said, 1800s, whatever century that is. He says, he could not have asked for more. Why, it was the greatest petition that man ever asked of God. It seems to me the greatest stretch of faith that I've ever heard or read of. Show me your glory. What a prayer for Moses. How great that was to ask for. I mean, what in the world does it even mean? God, show me your glory. What is he going to do? How is he going to show you his glory? Is he going to just show up? Is he going to overwhelm you? Is he going to I mean, can you even see God? What does this mean? And why ask it? What is the connection to the first one, to the first prayer that he had? I'm not going forward unless you go with us. And the first one was making sure that God was going to go with his people. The second one is a confirmation that he's going to go. Okay, God, you said it with your words, and I believe you. But now, give me something tangible. Prove it to me so that I can hold on to this. I need you to show it to me. That's how desperate Moses was. I can't just go with you just saying it. Show me your glory and prove it. That you haven't left, that you haven't pulled away, that you're not going to leave us. I mean, Moses, you think about him, he's already seen God visibly in many ways, many times. He's already experienced God's glory. Think about it, where he was surprised in the desert when God first met him through a burning bush. That was an expression of God's glory, and God talked to him. He had that experience. Think about all the miracles God did through him. That was God's glory. Think about when he was invited up a mountain with 70 elders, and they got to see God's feet, be bowing at his feet and eat with God, whatever that meant. Remember when we talked about that? Moses has seen God and God's glory when he's gone to the tent of meeting and the pillar of cloud comes down at the entrance while he's there praying, and he says he gets to talk with God as if he's face to face with him. Moses has seen God's glory. He's been up on the mountain where there's thunder and smoke, and God speaks to him and writes with his finger on the tablets for the Ten Commandments. Moses has seen a lot, so why is he asking now? Because he needs to know God means what he says. I need to know, God, you're going to be with me. Show me your glory. Well, what's God going to do? He picks how it's going to happen. He picks how he's going to reveal himself. He picks how he's going to reveal his glory. This is what he says, verse 19. The Lord said, I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you. Who knows what that means? All of God's goodness passing in front. And somehow Moses got to see it. I'll cause my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, Yahweh, in your presence. This is the same name he got at the burning bush. The one that means, it means I am who I am. It means he's all sufficient. There's no one else like him. The Lord, Yahweh. I'll proclaim my name in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy. I'll have compassion on whom I will have compassion. That verse seems to kind of fit a little odd. Why is he saying that there? Because he's reminding Moses, look, you didn't do anything to deserve this, for me to do this for you. And the Israelites didn't do anything to deserve me guaranteeing my presence with them. So I'm choosing in my sovereign right to do this. I'll have mercy on whom I have mercy. I'll have compassion on whom I have compassion. But, he said, you cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live. Then the Lord said, there's a place near me where you may stand on a rock. When my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock, a depression, maybe a cut down into the rock. And I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand and you will see my back. But my face must not be seen. God does not have a body. God does not have a hand. He does not have a face. He does not have a back. But he's talking in these human terms. The fancy word for this is anthropomorphisms. Remember that from English class. God speaking in human terms in a way that we might understand. God may be revealing himself in visible ways that we would see, but he's not really confined to that. God holds the universe in the palm of his hand. He doesn't have a hand, but it's He's so big that the universe would be that little to him. God is not confined to a body, but he decides he's going to show Moses his back. You can't see his face. You can't see the direct glory of God, or else you'll die. If you're confused by that, and that is overwhelming to you, good. Because that's the mystery of God. How high above us he really is. How amazing and powerful he really is. And that we could never stand in his presence without being completely overwhelmed, and if we saw too much, that we would die without the grace of God. It's the grace of God that God says, I'm going to cover you with my hand. I'm protecting you, Moses, from myself, from my glory. And all you're going to get to see is my back. That's how amazing God's presence is. How amazing his glory is. It happened to more than one person in the Bible that saw glimpses of his glory. Isaiah chapter 6, Isaiah sees the Lord on his throne and he falls on his face. And only the mercy of God tells him, get up. I'm going to talk to you. When Jesus had the disciples on the Mount of Transfiguration, what is transfiguration? It's complete changing where Jesus went from looking like a regular human being to his face glowing like fire, his clothes like lightning, and the disciples couldn't even look at him. And then all of a sudden Elijah and Moses show up on top of this mountain. They're going, what in the world? Who set the agenda for Isaiah's encounter? Who set the agenda for the disciples' encounter with God? Not the people. God did. When you encounter the glory of God, it's scary. It's overwhelming. It's kind of like if you ever have hung out with lions before. I'm sure you probably haven't. But we're fans of The Amazing Race in our household, and we were watching Amazing Race earlier this season, and they were in Africa, and the contestants had to, you know, there's two contestants on the team, had to go on this lion walk out in the wild with these two guys that had little sticks. And the lions would walk out in front, and these guys had these sticks, and then they would kind of prod the lions along if they turned the wrong way or whatever. And they told the contestants, don't make any sudden movements, and don't talk too loud. So you don't want to irritate the lions. And they went on this walk. I don't know if I would have gone on the walk. Who was in charge on that walk, the guides or the lions? The lions. When you're in God's presence, it's that way. I realized real quickly, I am not the one in control here. I have a humble reverence in front of Him. When you pray, show me your glory, do you realize what you're praying? You're asking to see the presence of the living God who could consume us. And only by His mercy and only by His grace do we ever get to catch glimpses of His glory. The love that we can ask, Moses did. Can we? The Christian Missionary Alliance did a study about 7 or 8 years ago on how to articulate our biblical understanding of seeking God's manifest presence. Not just His omnipresence, but seeking Him and how He would show up and relate in our lives. And that His visible power and presence would be at work in us as a body. I don't know how else to describe that. And the phrase they came up with was expectation without agenda. You can expect that God is going to move among you when you're seeking Him, when you're praying, when you're humbling yourself before Him and asking Him, but you don't get to set the agenda. He's going to choose how He wants to reveal Himself, what gifts He wants to use, how He wants to do it. But this phrase, I love it because it invites faith, it invites asking, it invites seeking. We don't set the agenda, because only God sets the agenda. I was asked once by someone this question. When have you felt the presence of God most powerfully in your life? And how did it feel? Think about that question. When did you feel the presence of God in your life the most powerfully, and how did it feel? Just think back through. I've experienced the undeniable presence of God, the visible, manifest presence of God, a number of times in my life. Sometimes real dramatic and life-changing, other times in just very simple ways, seem like blue jeans, everyday kind of Christianity. But the first time I felt the presence of God invade my life was, I've told you, bits and pieces of this story, but when I was in high school and going on a retreat, I was living a hypocritical life, a double life, looking the part at church and somewhat at home, but totally not living for the Lord at school, and had this very shallow routine kind of Christianity. So I went on this retreat, and on the third day of the retreat, I had been softening and changing throughout the first couple of days, going, man, I must be missing something here. And the third day, I woke up, and it was early in the morning, and youth retreats, you don't wake up early. And I had an urge to pray. And I didn't have that urge ever before. And so I didn't know really what to do, but I just prayed and prayed on anything that came to my mind, everything I could think of, and prayed for that day, prayed for God to work in my life and for God to show himself to me that day. And we went through the day, and some amazing things happened. We were in these groups going out, sharing about Christ with people. We were being taught how to do that, and then actually going and practicing doing that. And God led us to someone who needed to hear the message of Christ, who was ready to hear it, and the person accepted Christ that day with us. And I remember just like, wow, this is awesome. I can't believe that just happened. And just amazing conversation with this woman. And then we went back to the main retreat there for the evening. Everyone kind of gathered after dinner and shared our stories of what happened. And we worshiped the Lord. I had never worshipped God with my heart before. I had sung words with my mouth, but I never worshipped him. You know the difference? And I was this, there here was this tough, prideful teenage guy now broken and worshipping God with tears in my eyes. Never had experienced that before. But God was there. He was real. I believed. I worshipped him. And I just sensed that God was there with me. And afterwards, I was praying, and I sensed God say, not with an audible voice, I didn't hear words, it was just in my heart, this overwhelming burden, I've got a whole lot of more people that need to hear this message. I want you to go. I want you to do that. And I just remember, how did all this happen in one day where my life just flipped upside down? It's because of the undeniable presence of God. And folks, when he comes and he meets you, when he shows you bits of his glory, sometimes it's dramatic like that, other times it's not as dramatic. But who are we without the presence of God? Without his glory being shown in our lives? So it changes everything. The elders here at Emmanuel have been reading a book by A.W. Tozer called Fiery Faith. And it's just a compilation of sermons that he preached back in the 40s, 50s. Amazing preacher if you haven't ever heard or read A.W. Tozer. And we came upon this paragraph. 1 hour with the majesty of God would be worth more to you now and in eternity than all the preachers, including myself, he said that, that ever stood up to open their Bible. I want a vision of the majesty of God. Not as the song says, one transient gleam. No, I don't want anything transient. I want the gleam of majesty and wonder to be permanent. I want to live where the face of God shines every day. There's a guy hungry for the glory and presence of God. What about us? You hungry for the presence of God in your life? For the glory of God to be shown in your life? What we need is not the shallow experience of coming to church and putting in our time, doing this thing and then leaving, of maybe spending a few times throughout the week talking to God, maybe reading our Bible here or there, but no real sense of God's presence. Saying we believe in God, but not truly having his presence in our lives. How about it? Moses had found God. Have you? Are you hungry for him? Do you seek after him? Can you sense him? Do you hear his voice? Do you see his power? Do you see his glory? Folks, that's what sets us apart from the rest of the world. We don't just talk about God. We can know him. I'd love for people to say that about our church when they come in here. These people know God. They worship God. They have something I don't have, and I feel it when I come in here. That's what people should be saying about this church. It starts with us, folks. It starts with us. It starts with prayer. Do you want him today? We've built in some time to seek him, to go after his heart. No agenda, just expectation that God knows the desire of our hearts, and he wants us to pray these two prayers. You're not going to go with us. Don't send me. Show me your glory. God, show us your glory. A confirmation that you're still with us. We need that all the time. We're going to have a couple of songs, but I don't honestly care if you sing the songs. This isn't about singing. This is about you seeking the Lord, seeking His glory. If that means you stand, you stand. If it means you sit, you sit. If it means you pray, you pray. If you want to kneel, kneel. If you want to sing, then sing. Just see His presence. Invite the worship team to come up. Would you pray with me?